You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our guest says it's possible to balance work and family. For some people, she says the answer is hitting pause on your career. We'll talk to the author of Work, Pause, Thrive.
Right now, during Women's History Month, we're talking about women in science. According to a National Science Foundation 2015 special report, men make up 71% of the workforce in science and engineering occupations, even though women make up 50% of the total U.S. college-educated workforce.
While women's share of full-time full professorships in the STEM fields has more than doubled since 1993, women are in only about a fourth of these senior faculty positions. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. The numbers are even worse for minority women. They comprise fewer than 1 in 10 employed scientists and engineers in the United States.
One resource for women in science is the Earth Science Women's Network, known as ESWN. Tracy Holloway is the president and co-founder of ESWN, and she joins us now to talk about it. She is a professor in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Tracy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Veronica. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, there's a neat origin story behind the Earth Science Women's Network. Can you tell us how it came to be?
Yeah, well, maybe first I'll just jump to the punchline, which is to say that today the Earth Science Women's Network, or ESWN, has over 3,000 women working in over 60 different countries. Mm-hmm. And we're the largest organization of women in the geosciences or earth sciences, meaning meteorology, oceanography, geology, soil science, space science, volcanoes, the whole nine yards. And when we started ESWN, we had no idea that it was going to grow to be this large. In fact, at the time, in 2002, I was a postdoc working in New York City at Columbia University. And some friends and I, who all were finishing up our PhDs, we met at a large scientific conference in Washington, D.C. And, you know, we said, gosh, we should stay in touch because we're all going through these transitions that are affecting our careers, figuring out what jobs to take, whether to move across the country, even if you have a boyfriend who doesn't want to move, what to wear to an interview, how to make the decisions about crafting a career. And many of these questions were things that were too personal to ask our boss or our PhD advisor, but they were often too career relevant or professionally important to just rely on our girlfriends or our moms. And so we started talking with each other, and most of these issues at the time just seemed very personal. Like, who can you talk to about whether to take a job in California? But in time, we found that actually the issues that we were each facing individually were pretty typical of the kind of problems and challenges that are facing all scientists, but that have a particular resonance for women, because the typical scientist may move 5 or 6 times between the ages of 20 and 30. You move for college, then you go someplace for graduate school, you take a 2-year postdoctoral position, maybe another such position. If you're lucky, you get a permanent job after that, but you don't really know actually if it's permanent, especially, for example, a tenure track professor, until you get tenure, which is then another 6 years. And these kind of moves are disruptive to anybody, but the ages of 20 to 30 are, for many women, the time that they're settling down, having kids, these kind of issues. So we started as a peer mentoring group for each other. But we said, if this is helpful for us, maybe we should open the doors and make this an organization that any woman who would find it useful can join. So we doubled almost every year after that.
Wow. So that shows that there's quite a need for this, an appetite to have this sort of mentoring in place. And how was it developed over the years? I mean, it sounds like it started with pretty personal questions about, should I take this job in California? My boyfriend maybe doesn't want to go. It was kind of personal. Is it still? Does it still have that intimacy?
You know, I think that we've kept some of the intimacy. But of course, as you grow, you can do new things that you couldn't have done when you were just 6 people. And you know, that changes the culture of an organization. I would say almost right away, we started expanding beyond just women and just the earth sciences. Probably in our first or second year, we started a jobs network, which is a called the Earth Science Jobs Network. It is a listserv with over 5,000 subscribers, and it is hosted by the National Center for Atmospheric Research and posts probably 15 jobs a day. Many of them are academic type positions, but it's free to subscribe and free to post. And I think it was one of these situations where right away we saw something that was useful for the women in our network, sharing jobs, but then this is something that shouldn't be kept within any one gender, and so we made sure to open the jobs network. We also developed some career training programs, things like how do you figure out your career, and how do you build a professional network, and how do you communicate your work effectively. And we found that, again, these training programs, while we developed them for our members who are women at early career stages in the earth sciences, were actually useful for everybody. And now we run a series of career workshops every year at the American Geophysical Union meeting, which is a huge meeting with 29,000 people in San Francisco. And our career workshops are free and open to anybody who wants to attend. So we have been broadening our scope to serve a wider network of scientists. And actually, just a couple years ago, some of our board members launched a program to extend our model of peer mentoring to first-year college students, especially women college students who may be one of the few women in their undergraduate classes and trying to decide, should they stay in a STEM major or should they leave? So we've been running workshops and developing platforms for the women to connect online with the goal of making their experience through college welcoming and supportive, and making sure that nobody is switching out of STEM just because they feel isolated.
Right, I wanted to ask you about that. It sounds like a lot of the offerings have been made inclusive to anyone who wants to join them. But is there still something that uniquely serves the women in the sciences and STEM who may feel isolated depending on where they're working and how old they are, where they are in their careers, and they may not have that mentor there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we still have a discussion group online with over 3,000 people, but there's a lot of subgroups that is for women only. And that's partly because our members have asked for that. They've said that they value having this environment where they can talk about things that may be very personal, from where to breastfeed to how to deal with a uncomfortable situation at work. And this has been a forum for those kind of discussions. But we found that actually what one person views as their own personal problem is often a systematic issue. You may feel like you're not being nominated for awards, and that's hindering your professional progress. And you may take it personally. But actually, what we found working with different professional societies is that women in general are not being nominated as much for awards, and that women in general are not nominating each other for awards, and that there's a lot of unwritten rules about how that works. So what we found is that often one person's personal problem translates into some suggestions about how science can change to be more welcoming, and that we're in a position to be working with organizations to try to move change forward.
We're talking with Tracy Holloway right now, professor in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. She's a co-founder of the Earth Science Women's Network, and we're talking about that network right now. And Tracy, you mentioned some of the strands of conversation that go on, and one you mentioned was breastfeeding in the field. Now, this is something that probably, I mean, I can imagine that could still be a relatively new question, given the demographics of who's in STEM right now. Are there other areas like that where it really helps to have women talking to each other about some of the unique problems and questions that they may face?
Yeah, there's a number of interesting examples. One is this question of, if you get married, should you change your name? Because, you know, all of us who have gotten married or are considering getting married have to think about that question. But as a scientist, really, from the minute you enter graduate school, you're trying to make a name for yourself. You're trying to build your reputation as a scientist. And if you publish a couple of papers under your maiden name, and then you're ready to make the leap to get married, well, you know, what are you giving up by changing your name? What are the professional consequences of suddenly going from a name that may be getting some traction to a name that nobody knows in your field? And when we had our first conversation about this topic, it's a topic that's come up many times over the years, but actually we had so many people weigh in with their experiences that we summarized them all and made some plots because, you know, we are scientists. We really like to make plots. And, you know, talked about the women who had changed their names and were happy they'd changed their names, who'd changed their names and wished they hadn't, who used one name for their personal activities and a different name for their scientific activities. Just knowing that there's these different experiences and different alternatives, we've heard from many of our members, were helpful for them personally in making that big decision.
And I wanted to ask you if you see this now, the success of this, how it's grown as a model for women in other areas that your group doesn't particularly represent, where women are underrepresented.
Yes, absolutely. Over the years, I've talked to women in different fields of science who've been thinking about using ESWN as a model for their own work. And, you know, we're always happy to share our lessons learned and what's worked for us and what hasn't. We're personally also interested in expanding the scope of work that we serve because, you know, already the earth sciences cuts across chemistry, physics, math, engineering, many fields of ecology, biology, other disciplines. So on the one hand, it's a self-contained area, but it has connections with so many areas of STEM, and we all teach classes. Many of us teach classes at universities with undergraduates and graduate students across different areas of science and technology that, you know, our goal is to, you know, be as supportive and inclusive as possible, no matter what field of science or engineering.
And do you see programs like this maybe as helping to turn the tide and get these numbers of representation for women up in the STEM fields? You say you're working with undergrads in particular. Is this something you think that is proving to be effective, getting more women into STEM?
I think so. We are, you know, the bulk of our work is focused on these early career women, graduate students, postdocs, early career faculty, because these are women who've already made huge commitments in science as a career. And if we can keep these women in and make sure that they are on the pipeline to advance, then it's setting up role models for the next generation of women. And we do work with societies to track some metrics of how many women are attending meetings, how many are getting prestigious awards, how many are nominated for different prestigious outcomes. And it really is going up and up.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for coming in to talk about it today.
Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure.
That was Tracy Holloway, professor in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, also the Department of Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she was with us here to talk about the Earth Science Women's Network, which she helped to found.
Coming up after the news, our guest has advice for how to take a pause in your career and focus on family without killing off your career. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.